The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I'm kind of happy that the topic for the last Sunday of the year is equanimity, in particular the Brahmavihara of equanimity. It's the theme for the next 5 weekday morning sittings from 7 a.m., and so I wanted to kind of give more of an overview today or introduce the topic. But it seems pertinent given what this year, 2020, has been about. A year ago, I think none of us could have imagined how different our life would be this year and how disruptive, how challenged we were as a society and as a world and as individuals and maybe as families. And to have gone through this year with mindfulness would have meant that you would also have learned a bit about yourself, learned about how you are and the challenges of the world. You would have practiced with it. And one of the things to consider in practicing and being present for the challenges of the year is what wisdom has this year brought you? And with your wisdom, what equanimity has been cultivated? Or what equanimity can you now call on given what you've gone through this year? What are you more at ease about? What are you more not activated or agitated by and have maybe more, it's easier, you can keep your ease through something that a year ago would have been challenging for you? And how could you develop more equanimity? So this depends a little bit on what we mean by equanimity. Some people don't really like the term when they hear about it because equanimity can feel like it's kind of an aloofness or indifference or a coldness that we're somehow cold and unresponsive to what's happening in the world. And I think that it's the opposite, that when there's a quality of equanimity, that there's a lighter feeling and more open feeling, a feeling of more spontaneity and ease, because the forces that get in the way of equanimity are the very forces that get in the way of lightness, of ease, of spontaneity, of freedom themselves. And so sometimes because of the challenge people have around the topic of equanimity, sometimes it's useful to look at the opposite, what is not equanimous. And very quickly, I think we see that kind of the opposite of equanimity is usually not a very desired state. At least in Buddhist teachings, the opposite of equanimity is usually a pair of mental actions that we can do. One is called repulsion, and the other is attraction. Sometimes the second is called greed. When the mind is activated with a sense of revulsion or repulsion, aversion, hostility, the mind is agitated and stirred up and hot. And when the mind is activated by strong attraction and greed and lust, the mind is activated and not very equanimous, not very peaceful. And developing oneself so those states don't predominate. Those states are not here in the forefront. The absence of repulsion, the absence of greed or strong attraction to want, is a mind that's available and open and is able to be present without the filters, without the bias that repulsion, revulsion of even the mildest forms, or greed and attraction, even the mildest forms, sometimes predispose us to. That generally when we're caught in the grip and the mind is activated by these two polar forces, we have colored glasses, we have preferential ways of thinking and reacting and evaluating our situation. that if we have no repulsion towards anything and have no strong attraction, attraction here means not just simply appreciating something and liking something, but somehow caught in the grip of pursuing something, then the mind is much more peaceful. And the mind isn't, a mind as equanimous is not restless. Restless mind is not so nice. It's not agitated. Generally, an agitated mind doesn't feel very pleasant to be in. And it's not contracted or sunk or depressed in any way. So the absence of all those things is what in Buddhism is called equanimity. And Brahmavihara, and it's very highly valued in Buddhism, this quality of equanimity, so much so that it's like they say there's many different words for snow or rain or, you know, soil. I used to be a soil scientist, and so and there's all these different kinds of soil, and when I studied soil science, I was amazed at how many different names there are for soil, different kinds, depending how much sand or clay there is in it, or different things. And so so the Buddhists have, the word equanimity is applied in many different areas. There's all these lists that have equanimity as the last factor of the list. So, for example, the seven factors of awakening, equanimity is the last. The four Brahmaviharas, the four kinds of love, equanimity is the fourth love. The paramis, the ten kind of beautiful or healthy or pure qualities of character that gets cultivated in Buddhism, the last one is equanimity. The four jhanas, the four deep states of concentration, the last one is characterized by equanimity. So here we come at the end of the year, and it seems like the last talk of the year can be equanimity, which seems very nice. In terms of the Brahmaviharas, these four kinds of positive regards, of ways of being in the world with love, equanimity is a kind of love, is a kind of way of caring for the welfare and happiness of the world, as an expression of kind regard or supportive regard for the world. And to connect equanimity with love is also something which is not so obvious to people. The idea is that but there are the first three Brahmaviharas of goodwill, loving kindness, compassion, and then appreciative joy. So to celebrate the joy, rejoice in the joy and the well-being of others. And these three are said to get perfected with equanimity. And why the first three get perfected with equanimity is because the near and far enemy of each are no longer there with equanimity if they're combined with equanimity. So the near enemy for loving kindness is sentimental attraction or attachment to others, feeling the allure and the pull and the sticky attachment of, you know, lust or different things. It looks like it might be loving kindness, but there's usually a self agenda that we want something for ourselves in a kind of attraction to others that can sometimes happen. Exactly how that is, what the right word is to call that, I'm not sure, but it looks like goodwill, looks like loving kindness, but it has a personal agenda of something we want for ourselves in it. And then on the far enemy of loving kindness is hostility, ill will. The near enemy of compassion is distress. An extreme form is being horrified at the suffering of the world, being distressed by it, being disturbed by it. And it can seem like the disturbance is not too great, like the very nature of disturbance is the compassion. It's confused for compassion. The far enemy of compassion, the far enemy means that which can't coexist with compassion, is that it destroys compassion entirely is wanting to harm people, cruelty. The near enemy of sympathetic joy or appreciative joy is when the joy is self-referential in nature. It's about, you know, so it can be a certain kind of giddiness, a certain kind of relief, a certain kind of taking delight because it feels so good for myself to do that. But rather, rejoicing is really an opening and rejoicing outwards for the goodness of other people, without really being consumed or caught up with it for oneself. And the far enemy is jealousy and enviness, is dislike about someone having a good time or having success. So both of those kind of far and near enemy are generally when the Brahmaviharas are somehow entangled with self-preoccupation, self-concern, getting something for oneself. To discover real freedom in these Brahmaviharas is to discover how not to be self-preoccupied with them, and just really to being an openness and a big yes to the situation we're in. Sometimes the yes comes as loving kindness, sometimes as compassion, sometimes as rejoicing, and sometimes as equanimity. And so when equanimity is developed and combined with these others, it purifies loving kindness, compassion, and appreciative joy. Equanimity also stands by itself. And there's two, when the reference point for this deep Brahmavihara equanimity, as it is for the others, factors, is not everyday life. And so to be judging and questioning and wondering about what are these Brahmaviharas and how do they work, if you're only trying to make sense of them in your daily life, then that's not the reference point in Buddhism for how deep and full and meaningful these can be. Because the reference point in Buddhism is meditation. And meditation is a place to learn a simplicity of being. It's a place to learn how not to be self-preoccupied or in it with greed for oneself or benefiting oneself, just kind of a kind of tight and narrow and attached kind of way, selfish way. Egotism and selfishness gets freed as we develop more freedom in Buddhism. And so to experience that meditation is for some people really a wonderful time where we put aside our concerns for the world, our relationships to other people, all the things we have to do, and really can settle deeply into ourselves to feel the goodness of that, the relief, the ease of that. And with that ease, that non-agitation, non-restlessness, that openness that can come, that can give us a whole different relationship to love, to loving kindness, to compassion, appreciative joy, than we can in other circumstances when life is much more complicated. And we start feeling the simplicity of these things, some people might even say the purity of them, when they're uncomplicated by the self-concern and preoccupation. But these first three, sometimes are not really appropriate in certain circumstances. In some situations, things are so difficult or so unusual that our care, our love, our unpreoccupied kind of willingness of kind regard for what's going on, it's not really a time for loving kindness where we're wishing for people's welfare. It's not really a time for compassion. We're wishing and hoping that people suffer less, wishing for less suffering. And it's not really a time for rejoicing because there's nothing going on that can be rejoice-worthy. There are times when things are really challenging in this world. People have great difficulties and challenges that we're in. We have big, big difficulties and challenges. And sometimes it's actually out of our control what people do with their lives and what people do with their the choices they make. And people make unhealthy choices, or there's acts of nature, they get sick, or all kinds of things can happen. And where these other doesn't quite work to living in the first Brahma, three Brahma Viharas, but rather the only thing that's left to do is to be equanimous, to not be distressed, to not be angry, not be afraid, not be agitated, but to keep our hearts open, but learn how to keep an even balance, a balanced mind. And one of the definitions of the equanimity Brahma Viharas is having a balanced mind or a balanced heart. So we don't get imbalanced because things are so difficult. It's also a mind that regards people with the word is samma, S-A-M-A, which it's often translated as evenness, levelness, but also it can be translated kind of like the word justice, to treat everyone equal. So to be able to view people with an evenness of mind, a balance of mind, to view people, some people translate it as impartial, with an equality, where we're able to be with a situation, but there's a kind of, we treat people fairly, evenly, nicely, properly, but we're not agitated, not caught up in things. So sometimes the only thing left is equanimity. And we know we have kind regard for someone, but because the things are so difficult, finding our place of equanimity is the best thing we can do for the situation, how to support other people. Because the alternatives available to us might be not so desirable. If the alternative is to be involved in strong or mild or very small revulsion, repulsion, horror, distress, pushing something away, or attraction and pulling to and insisting things have to be some different kind of way. I've been the recipient of people's so-called compassion for me, and I didn't really feel it was compassion. I felt that they were doing this for themselves. They were trying to insist that I be different so they could feel different, they could feel better. And that's not real compassion. And I've been the recipient of compassion where I felt that they kind of were unconcerned with themselves, and it wasn't about themselves. They just had a clear, clean care, compassion for the struggles that I had. So equanimity is the alternative to some of the more distressing and even harmful ways we can be in the world. So to develop equanimity is sometimes, because it's so much better than the alternatives, it's a really fantastic way to develop the practice and to learn how to be in the world. It's really crucial because we can't always bring loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy to every possible situation. And then to remember that equanimity then is the channel, is the vehicle for equanimous love, equanimous goodwill, equanimous care, kind regard for the world. It's not cold and aloof. It's the opposite. There's a warmth. There's a softness. There's a ease. There's a lightness. There's a freedom in the equanimity because it's not self-caught up. So there's two circumstances in which equanimity Brahma Viharas are really useful to develop, and when the other three are not really the right call. So one is when things are just so difficult. The other is in deep meditation. In deep meditation, it's sometimes said that the first three are a little bit more complicated. They're a little bit more conceptual, a little bit more involved, a little bit more consideration of the mind mental activity. And at some point, in deep meditation, we find the limitation. We have to get to the boundaries, the limit to how deep and still and quiet and peaceful we can become with loving kindness, with compassion and sympathetic joy. And at that point, we feel that just the other side of those, to go a little bit deeper in meditation, is there's equanimity. And it can still feel the warmth, the kindness, the kind regard, kind of, It's not really words or thoughts, but a glow of warmth, of peacefulness, of ease, where clearly there's equanimity, and clearly it's radiating from us in a way that is a kind of a love. But it doesn't have any of the subtlest little agitation, maybe, or movements of the mind that we find with the first three. So it's one way or the other, we find the limits to the first four forms of love. Then we have the fourth type of love, the love that's equanimous. And the ancient texts liken it to have a number of similes for this equanimity Brahma Vihara. One of them is I see messages here about the link. I'll put the link at the bottom of the chat at the end of the talk as well, so you'll get it there as well. So similes for this kind of equanimity. One is that if a long-lost friend suddenly appears, you might jump up in joy and be all excited to see your friend. But after the friend's been around for a few days, weeks, months, there's a calmness that sets in, and you're more equanimous about the friend being there, and it's actually nice not to be always excited. And the calm, more equanimous way of being with a friend allows for maybe now for the friendship to develop and further. They can't really develop if it's just all excitement about not having seen them for a while. So that's an ancient kind of simile. Another simile, which works in some families, is the idea that if parents have many children, that their relationship to all the children is even or balanced, this kind of equanimous kind of relationship to each of them. And now there's still one more simile is that of parents whose child has grown up into adulthood and is well established in adulthood, have left home, established in career, family, whatever kind of, they're established. And then the parents don't have to think about, they still love the child, but they're no longer an active concern for their well-being. And so the love is now more equanimous because the compassion is not needed. There's not rejoicing because there's living their lives in a good way. So equanimity Brahma Vihara, to cultivate a mind and a heart that's free of repulsion, revulsion, attraction, greed, and to experience how wonderful it is to have a mind that's not caught in those things. And one of the most sublime and exquisite and wonderful qualities of heart and mind is this mind that's free of attachment, free of agitation, a mind that then can be in the world without being reactive to the world, but can be equanimous to the world and therefore respond in the way that the world needs us. And I hope that this practice of Buddhism that we're doing is really a practice to benefit the world that we live in, that we don't just do it for ourselves. In fact, if you only did it for yourself, this practice, sooner or later, you'll come to the limit of how far you can practice, how far it makes sense to keep practicing. At some point, it only makes sense to practice if you're doing it also for the welfare of others in addition to yourself. And to benefit the world around us, to really be able to see the situation non-reactively, with equanimity and freedom, then your care, your love, your kind regard, your generosity has a clean channel to respond in the way the world needs us to respond. May each of us find the appropriate responses, appropriate for the world, appropriate for us as the responder, so we can respond and support creating a better world for all beings. Thank you.